really appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate those that are willing to go to places that I'm quite sure in a lot of instances are outside their comfort zone to share the gospel, to share at least, if nothing else, the need for prayer, that people see that there is a need for prayer and that there's power in that. And I'm very confident that those who went, their lives have changed because of it. I'm also confident that others' lives were changed too because of the presence of Cheryl and the group that was there, and perhaps even on occasion some that didn't even have much of an interaction but were just impressed by the fact that someone was there and cared enough to be out there. So there's all kinds of fallout, all kinds of ramifications about stuff like that. So I just appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you sharing, and bless you for that. And we'll continue to, hopefully you're praying for that ministry. And if you're not, I hope you're prompted to now, and we'll continue to do that as well, because that is quite valuable. This morning, I'm going to share an account out of the Bible with you, out of the book of Hosea. So if you don't know where the book of Hosea is, it's just the other side of Daniel in the Old Testament. I just want to share this with you. I remember one time, it's been a long time ago now, about 20 years ago now or so. I was in church, and the pastor, I don't even remember what book he was preaching out of, but he told me the book, or he announced to the congregation the book that he was preaching out of, and I went to the table of contents because I didn't know where it was at, right? And so I went to the table of contents, and the guy sitting next to me, who actually was the one who drugged me to church and had been in church most of his life, he's like, "You don't want anybody to know that you're looking in the table of contents to find the book of the Bible." And I said, "Would you rather them see me do this?" Because that's the next step, right? My point to telling you that is there's no shame. If you don't know exactly where the book of Hosea is, just look in the table of contents. It will give you the page number. It'll save you a lot of flipping. Your eyes won't hurt near as bad. You don't have to try to hide the stuff. You know, I didn't even know there was a Hosea in the Bible. What's that guy talking about? So it's all good. We would rather you look in the table. Am I right? We would rather you look in the table of contents and find it than always wonder, did Pastor Tom really preach out of the Bible today? So it's in there right after the book of Daniel. So if you want to open up to the book of Hosea, you're more than welcome to. We'll be in chapter 1, all of chapter 1, actually, most of the time, and a little bit of chapter 3 as I share this story with you. I really am fascinated by this account of Hosea. And one of the reasons I'm fascinated by it is because, to me, it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning, as stunning to me as the walls of Jericho falling down, as stunning to me as the Red Sea parting, as stunning to me as Peter walking on the water. This story is stunning. And the purpose of this story is that God is going to play out before the subconscious of his children, of Israel, what it's like to be unfaithful. Hosea chapter 1 and verse 1. When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go and take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord." Now, we live in a small town, and so some people say this is a small town concept, but it's really not. It's just, they do this in large cities too. It's just smaller pockets of those large cities. But this is already starting to make a pretty good story, isn't it? And this story is already probably, this account's probably already starting some conversations around some dinner tables. The holy man is going to marry a harlot. Well, I wonder if he knows. I wonder if he even knows who she really is. She must really have him fooled. I wonder if he's really a holy man. I wonder if Hosea sat at that dinner table and thought, "God, why me? I have been your prophet. I have done everything you've asked me to do, and you want me to marry her?" I'm going to tell you, this little side note too. I don't think there would have been any job harder than being a prophet in Old Testament times. Because let me tell you something. When they came to church to preach, yeah, you need to tighten up a little. Because they're not coming to bring a feel good encouraging, oh, you're doing so good, or, well, here's a little, you know, you did this a little bit wrong, but it's okay, it's all right, we're just going to get things changed. No, they came and here's what they did. Here's what you're doing wrong, and here's what's going to happen if it doesn't change, and none of it's good. And so that preacher got hired, and about 4 weeks later, the pulpit committee's meeting again. Because that dude makes us, yeah, like, I feel horrible when I leave church, right? Because Hosea just came and told us we're all messed up again, right? So it was, my point is, it was hard, unpopular work, right? And I wonder if Hosea thought, why this? I've been faithful. I bet my family has been faithful. They've raised me to believe in you, and why do I have to marry a harlot? Come on, man. We all know what a harlot is, right? We need to get into that. Okay. All right. Why do I have to do that? And I suspect the neighbors are talking. In fact, when I go outside and I smile at the neighbors and I wave at them, they give me that smile back like, not so innocent smile back, right? Because people are people and we're just going to talk a little bit, right? And before it, really anything can kind of settle in, verse 3 happens. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. So Hosea married Gomer, who's the daughter of Diblaim. The dad always gets some credit, especially in the Old Testament, you know. So like Jordan, son of Tom. Next time you see Jordan, my 20-year-old who's worried about being 30, say, hi, Jordan, son of Tom, or daughter of Tom. How you doing? Took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu, and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. It shall come to pass in that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. So Gomer and Hosea have a child together. They have a boy, little boy. Elijah's my first boy. I've got four daughters, and then I've got Elijah. He's four. If I'd had Elijah first, I'd never had any more kids. Whew, boys are different, right? But that little boy running around, and he's grinning, and he's big-hearted, and even as he's climbing up the refrigerator, the reason he's climbing up the refrigerator is get daddy a sandwich or something. You know, I mean, he's that kid, right? He got dirt on his face. I came home from work last night, and he had apparently had a hold of a couple of two or three different colors of markers. I'm colorblind, don't know what color they were, but they weren't his skin color, I can tell you that, right? And every time that little boy is riding around on the tricycle up and down on Main Street, every time Jezreel is outside playing, he's got mud on him, trying to help dad fix the car or doing whatever. Every time that you hear his name called Jezreel, you're reminded of a time that you'd been unfaithful, that you took matters into your own hands, and now there's consequences for those actions. Every time that little boy's name is called out, that attitude is underlying. That comes to the front of your mind. And so instead of a cute little boy riding around on a tricycle that got a hold of his sister's markers, it's Jezreel. And oh no, now we have to go back and think about that time. And think about those consequences that were produced from that time. And so Hosea has a little boy, and they're going along, and before he can even kind of figure out really what's going on, verse 6, and she conceived again and bore a daughter. She conceived again and bore a daughter. And I want you to notice something out of this text. This is something that I hadn't noticed for a long time. I want you to notice something out of this text, though. It didn't say she conceived and bore him a daughter. It just said she conceived and bore a daughter. And if you marry this verse back to the first passage that I read where God said you're going to have a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry. Well, we're all grown up. Let's just get this put together. That little girl isn't his. That little girl is a product of harlotry. And so before he can even kind of figure out why we got to name our son Jezreel and kind of what's going on with that. He has another child in the house, but this time the child's not even his. And God said to him, call her name Loruhamah, for I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. That name literally means no love. No love. Little girl. Little girl, no love. How can you look at a little girl and think no love? I remember when Gracie came to our house, and she was about 6 weeks old. She weighed about 6 pounds, a little big tiny thing, and she was in one of those seats. I call them peanut seats, right? But they're car carriers, and you can strap them in the car, but you also carry your baby around in them. I think I saw one in here earlier today, right? And so they're called, I call them peanut seats, right? And so he brings her in this peanut seat, right? This little girl, and he sets her on the table, and he's got some stuff I got to do. Cindy's not there yet, and so my first thought is, what am I supposed to do now? But then I gathered myself a little bit, and I walked over, and I looked down at this little girl, and she opened her eyes. Gracie has blue eyes. She opened her eyes. I fell in love. That baby's mine. Oh, my gosh. My heart just melted. Little girl, Loruhamah. So every time you call her name, no love. No love. How can that even be, God? What's going on here? What are we doing? What are we doing? And Hosea's probably not even sure exactly how to feel about all this, how he's supposed to feel about all this. Put yourself in his place. How would you feel about this? And so call her Loruhamah. Now when she had weaned Loruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. Once again, doesn't say it's Hosea's son. She conceived and bore a son. Then God said, call him Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. So this time the child's name means not my people. You are not my people. And every time that Hosea has to sit around the dinner table, he's reminded that he extends love to a woman who doesn't love him in return. And every time he sits around that table, he's reminded that he provides for, cares for, and keeps for someone who doesn't love in return, who doesn't seem to appreciate in return. And if you're living next door to that little house, next door to Hosea and Gomer, you're thinking, I don't blame him. I don't blame him for not my people. I don't blame him for no love. Wouldn't be my people either. Sadly enough, I've known people that have married into blended families who have nothing to do with the children that weren't their biological children. That's horrible. If you marry into a blended family, that's good, except the children count too, right? So let's just make sure we get that part right if that's going to happen, okay? But the neighbors don't blame him. Who could blame him? Once again, how could you feel? There's three children sitting around that table. One of them is his. Night after night after night, he's not sure where his wife is, where she goes. He knows what she's doing, but he's not sure where she is or where she goes. Night after night after night after night. Who could blame him for being bitter? But then the neighbors notice something really peculiar about Hosea. See, he's not sitting around the table being bitter. When they peek over the fence in the backyard, they see him pushing those little kids on a swing. And they walk down to get a snow cone, and one in each hand and one on his shoulders. And they're laughing. And they're playing. And the holy man seems to care deeply for those children. How can he even do that? How can he even think that? Verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people. There it be said to them, you are the sons of living God. Lo, I mean, where it says you are not my people, God says, I'm saying to you, you are the son of the living God, that you are my people, that you do matter, that you do count. Then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves a head, and they shall come up out of the land, and great will be the day of Jezreel, and say to my brethren, my people, and to your sisters, mercy is shown. Your translation might say, you are loved. To lo ruhamah, you are loved. And so Hosea says to lo ami, you are my people. I know what your name says, but you are my people. And to that little girl, you're loved. You're loved. And that's the way Hosea chooses. That's the way Hosea chooses to interact. But somewhere in the back of your mind, as you watch from your porch drinking your lemonade across the street, somewhere in the back of your mind, you've got to be thinking, but why does he stay with her? I get the kids, because, you know, kids are pretty easy to love most days. Kind of, yeah. Kids are pretty easy to love, right? Grandkids are incredibly easy to love. Yeah, kids, well, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. No, I'm just kidding. Why does he stay with her? How can he stay with her? And that seems so crazy. That seems so crazy. And then just when it seems so crazy, something even more bizarre happens. Turn to Hosea chapter 3 if you're following along in your Bible. Verse 1. Then the Lord said to me, Hosea is speaking in first person now. Then the Lord said to me, go and love a woman who is loved by a lover and committing adultery, just like the love of the Lord for his children of Israel who looked to other gods and loved the raisin cakes of pagan. I can picture the scene. Kids are in bed, warm, sleeping. They've asked for their glass of milk for the last time. And they're finally asleep. That kid, that boy, can drink 16 glasses of milk at night. 16. He can. They're asleep. They're right where they're safe. They're warm. Hosea wakes up and he rolls over, and once again, as he reaches out and feels the sheet is cool and empty on the other side of the bed. But this time he decides to do something different. And so he gets up and he gets dressed, puts on his overcoat. He probably even puts on his hat to kind of shade his face a little bit because he knows where he has to go, and he knows that he doesn't want to be seen there. And he goes out and finds Gomer exactly where he expected to find her. And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out some money. And with an outstretched hand, he says to her, let me pay your price tonight. Will you let me pay your price tonight? Come home with me. Now, if you were in a movie theater, the movie just ended. Lights came on, right? Make sure you take your trash with you. Ball games too. Kind of feel sorry for Ray Carnes a little bit, not going to lie. Just a little side note, right? So if the movie was over, it's time to go. But don't you feel a little bit cheated? That's not the end of the movie. Did she take the money? Did she go back home? I want to know that. What happened at the end? And the reason that we're left wanting, because I'm going to tell you, for 14 chapters in the book of Hosea, you never know whether or not Gomer took the money. You never know whether or not she accepted the love. And here's why. See, we missed the point of the story. The pinnacle of the story is not whether or not she took the money. The pinnacle of the story is a love that is unrelenting. The pinnacle of the story is a love that's willing. Is a lover that has decided, I'm going to love you. No matter where you've been. No matter what you've done. No matter where you are. And no matter what you're doing. That's the pinnacle of the story. And so God, with an outstretched hand, because you've probably got this figured out by now, if you've read through Hosea, I'm sure you've got it figured out by now. The Hosea represents God in this story. And God, with an outstretched hand, says, I love you. And I know there are times, because you're just like me in a lot of ways. Sorry about that, but you're just like me in a lot of ways. And I know there's times when you thought, God, are you there? God, really? Do I have to go through this? Really? Couldn't this just be a lot easier? Like, especially the American church, man. Like, God, aren't you just supposed to, like, give me the American dream? Like, I don't even know what the American dream is, really, except here's my American dream, that God loves me and that I love him and that I don't want or need for anything else. That's our God. And with outstretched hands, we'll work out the details when you get here. Because there's going to be some details that are going to need to be worked out. Love you. That will never change. I remember one time, I'm not going to tell you which one, but one of my children came up to me and said, Dad, I've done something and I don't even want to have to tell you this because I don't think you're going to love me after I tell you this. I said, let me tell you something before you even start. There is nothing right now that you could say to make me not love you. Nothing. I don't care what you have to tell me next. Disappointed. Stressed. I may even rant and rave a little bit because on occasion Tom can rant and rave. I got some Italian blood. I can get going. But there's nothing that you could ever tell me do to make me not love you. And this story represents God who's saying the same thing to you right now. So if you think God has abandoned you, that's not true. If you think there's no way God could ever love you because I've been doing this, or I've been there, or I am currently doing this, or I am currently there, or sometimes I don't show that love back as good as I could. If not true. John 3:16 is so simplistic, yet so deep and wonderful, I think we miss the point. For God so loved the world, that's us. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son with outstretched hands. He said, I love you. And I am paying your price tonight. I'm getting goosebumps. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish. You sing that song. I love that song, by the way. I've never heard that song. Shall not perish. Life. That's the kind of love that is in pursuit of you. That's the kind of love that's gotten a hold of you. That's the kind of love that should have a profound effect on you. That's the kind of love that God wants to flow through you. That kind of love. So how does the story end? I don't know. It's your story. My story. So you tell me how it ends. You can come on up, Jason, if you want. We're going to finish up. I'm not exactly sure what you guys do at the end of the sermon. I got a fairly good idea, but I think, go ahead and stand up. When God's word gets put out, you have to make a decision on that word. You either got to say, I reject that word, or I accept that word, I'm going to move in that word, I'm going to get better about that, I'm going to quit that, or whatever. But we don't want it to be about, we really want it to be about accepting a love that will not let you go. And so this morning, as Jason provides some music, and I'm going to ask to maybe, I don't know, I'm going to put him on the spot, but I bet John would probably be willing to come up here, and Bud would probably be willing to come up here, and anybody else who wants to come up here and perhaps pray with someone if you need prayer. If you need to make a decision that you want to accept that love in return today, that you want to make a decision for Jesus Christ, maybe that's your time. Maybe you just need to be a little better about it. Like some nights you come home, but some nights you're out. You know what I'm saying? Figuratively, right? And so I just need to be a little bit better about accepting what God has laid on the table for me. I don't know what it might be, but we need to make a decision today. If you'd like to come up and be prayed for, you're welcome to. If not, we're just going to worship a little bit, and we'll be praying for you and ourselves as well as we do that.